Hello, I'm Robert Bounds, and this is Monocle's Culture Show. On the programme today, we're giving the new record by Sharon Van Etten a spin. It's the fifth studio album by the New York singer and her first in the last 4 years. In the interim, Van Etten released an EP, dabbled in acting with a part in Netflix's sci-fi series The OA, and wrote the score for the film Strange Weather, as well as appearing on the revamped Twin Peaks score. The new album is called Remind Me Tomorrow and was written in the scraps of time when she wasn't doing any of her extracurricular activities. To discuss it today, I'll be joined by the writer Liv Siddle and rock and pop critic for The Times, Will Hodgkinson. Welcome to the programme, both.
Thank you.
I think we've had a strange time in the green room before making this programme, and I hope some of that strange ebullience makes its way into the programme. Let's see how it works.
Let's see, yeah.
A lot of that ebullience, it has to be said, comes from listening to this record. We've all spun it a lot of times. We've all really enjoyed it. Will, where does Sharon Van Etten sit in the kind of musical universe? If people aren't perhaps familiar with her name, who are her brothers and sisters in pop?
Before this album, I would have said she fitted into the kind of confessional indie rock genre. There are a lot of songs which were about past relationships, bad relationships. It was very tasteful, you know, always got good reviews, but it was kind of felt, you know, if you're into that kind of music, then it ticks all the right boxes. Now, this album is very different. It's got lots of synths on it. It's kind of icy. There's drum machines. And funnily enough, even though it's got this kind of harder exterior, the lyrical content is actually much more upbeat. Whereas before, it was, you know, it was kind of young women struggling with life. Whereas now, I wonder if because she's had a kid and because she's been doing all these other things, there hasn't been much time for a kind of self-obsession or preciousness, and she's just had to get on with it. And in a weird sort of way, it's made the songs more profound. You know, they're great. And they're quite often just about, you know, moments of domesticity or moments of happiness. They're not necessarily about dark nights of the soul. Yeah, for me, it's worked really, really well. So it's a bit of a reinvention.
It's funny because it starts off, the first track on the album starts with the line, "When I told you everything, you said, holy shit." But that seems about as revelatory and kind of spilling the beans as it gets, Liv, right? This is a punchy record. It's a pop record.
It's very punchy. It's very poppy. And it does kind of, as you say, well, it kind of sums up lots of different themes, and it isn't so sort of self-referential. But then there are lovely songs. There's one, Malibu, which is just about sort of going on a very romantic holiday as a kind of a new couple and just how fun that is. And there's just so much kind of hope and loviness in there, but without being too smushy or too sad or just too intense. It's just kind of this bright blast of Sharon. For me, the most important thing about it is just her vocals, because, you know, she's so, so good at singing. And in her past albums, that's been sort of put through a sort of tunnel of very emotional singing and very kind of like drawn out, very sad, intensely sad songs. And now it's just she's there with the synths, and it's this whole new Sharon voice coming through, like this blast. It's just great, yeah.
It's kind of major chord, primary coloured kind of rock. I mean, we're not underselling it by saying it's those things. This could work in a stadium. This could work in bigger venues than she's used to playing, just to put her into a musical universe. Where are we saying? Let's mention some other bands that kind of remind us of this.
Right? It reminds her voice reminded me of somewhere between Stevie Nicks, that kind of throaty, lived-in, get-on-with-it atmosphere. And then,
especially her solo stuff as well, right? And some of the production.
Yeah, Stevie Nicks, age of 17. Yeah. You know, she's got a song called 17, which is fantastic. And it's very, very different, but, you know, it reminds me of it. But the other person, funnily enough, is Susie and the Banshees, Susie Sue. And what Susie Sue did so well was have this complete attitude that you just, you know, you didn't question, but it was also very, very atmospheric, almost like it belonged to a film or something. And somehow those two things have coalesced. And so you said earlier on it sounded almost like stadium rock. It does, but there's another side to it. And the other side is underground music, you know, atmospheric, kind of, you know, weird German movie film soundtrack music. It's got a lot of that going on too. And you wouldn't think the two mix, but they do, really, because the songs themselves are brilliantly written. So you can afford all this atmosphere on top of it, because there's something holding it down, but underneath.
Yeah, because so she soundtracked Twin Peaks. She worked on the Twin Peaks soundtrack and the film Strange Weather. So maybe she's kind of got that out of her system, and this is kind of pure straight down the line. This is an album with 10 tracks on it, most of them about 4 to 4.5 minutes long. There's quite a lot of tradition in the way that it's kind of set out, right?
Yeah, I think it's quite traditional in the best way.
Yeah.
But she's just great at making albums. Every album she's made so far has been such a succinct sort of package. There's no, I don't think there's been any tracks on her other albums that have been kind of throwaway. They've all been very kind of, very well packaged up together to kind of give you this one very strong theme that kind of pulls all the tracks together as a whole. So she's very good at that. And
yeah,
it seems
that's true.
Quite effortless.
It's really nice actually, because it does feel like an album, where so often now, because of the way people consume music, artists don't necessarily think of an album with a theme running through it, but this does. I mean, if you compare this to Are We There or Tramp, the other albums, which are completely different, you know, this one, it feels very much of a piece.
So there's the muse possibly of she's happy. One of the things we're going to talk about later is that she also is training, I think, to be a therapist.
Yep.
Is that right?
To listen to other people's problems, not just sing about your own.
Yeah, so there's all sorts of things that are making us go, this is the best album she's ever made. We're kind of saying that. And there's all sorts of reasons why. It's like, leave the baggage with other people. It's their problems, a few. The soundtrackery and the kind of more ephemeral, asymmetrical music can kind of sit in film soundtracks and be that thing. This has kind of taken a weight off her mind, it seems, in a kind of good way.
I think so.
And I want to talk about New York. She wears the New Yorkness heavily. This seems like a lot of different kind of potential kind of New York bands. If we can define something as being a New York record in terms of its sound rather than its content, not talking about walking across Central Park, etc., is this possible to do this, to say something's got a New York sound? Maybe because it sounds a bit punky, or it sounds like something that would have reverberated around CBGB back in the day. I don't know.
That's a really hard question, isn't it, if something sounds New York-y? I don't know.
Because it's often used, reviewers often use this as a thing. It sounds so New York.
You can hear
the Brooklyn
Strokes
in this.
Sound New York.
Right. But what do we kind of mean by that musically?
Well, I think you see, look at the Velvet Underground compared to, I don't know, the Doors. The Doors were florid. The Velvet Underground were tough. If New York's a tough city, so perhaps there's an element to that. But to me, this isn't a New Yorker album. This is an album by someone coming to New York from somewhere else. She's from New Jersey. This is a real New Jersey album. New Jersey is a bit like being in the, you know, I grew up in the suburbs of London, and you're on the outside looking in. That's very different from being some cool person who grew up in the, you know, the Lower East Side.
Yeah, it's so true. And when you get a lot of good bands, you know, from the UK, and they've come from like Surrey or something, and they've come to the big city, and they're like, yes, finally, my time.
Yeah. It works better.
Because I think you're so bored in the suburbs that it does breed a kind of like a desperation for creativity and like going to the city and making music and all that stuff.
Well, I remember Brett Anderson saying that where he grew up in Haywards Heath, he could literally look down the train line and imagine that London was at the other end.
Yeah.
But he's too far away to be a part of anything.
Yeah.
You know,
and
you
New Jersey is the same. You feel left out.
I've just read the book Cold Black Mornings, actually. And that's great when he's kind of, I just wanted to get a sense of what was at the other end of the line.
Exactly.
Train line in this case. But the others, presumably in the follow up memoir, I suppose.
Well, the rest of it. Yeah, I guess so. But I would say this has got that thing. And I mean, a lot of people said about 17. That it's got a Bruce Springsteen quality.
Yeah.
It's not so, it does, but I think what it really has is the fact that Bruce Springsteen did that. If you listen to Born to Run, it's the same thing. It's that idea of this kind of romantic escape from your city, escape from your town. We're going to get out of here. We're going to show them all.
Yeah.
You know, but at the same time, it's bittersweet because, you know, you're losing something. So I felt that it's a suburbanites album dreaming of New York rather than a New Yorker album.
They're always the best, aren't they?
I think that's absolutely true. Definitely.
Big tick for Will there.
Big tick.
Bang.
Oh. Yeah.
So this was produced by John Congleton, who's worked with St. Vincent a lot. Has this album been St. Vincentised, Congletonised? These are good words. They're terrible words.
I think it's a very good word.
Can you see a trademark sound? Can you see what he's done? Can you see how he's worked with Sharon Van Etten to make this new record?
I think it would be reductive to kind of compare St. Vincent and Sharon's new album, just because John's been involved. I don't think the two should necessarily be compared. I don't really, I know it sounds bad, I don't really want to look for John in it. I want to believe that it's It's Sharon's new sound because
someone,
she kind of...
someone waves their particular kind of magic dust on it or their particular brand of knob twiddling.
Yeah,
there
perhaps.
Is something about that.
I know that I read that she sort of just got bored with the sound of indie bands and guitars and, like, you know, when the drum comes in, when the bass comes in, it became a bit samey to her. And maybe that's why she chose to work with John. I'm not completely sure, but...
Talking
yeah,
productive,
I mean, definitely...
I've just said a producer, all they do is sprinkle magic dust. That's a huge cliche. And not twiddles knobs. Well, what's happened to me as a kind of writer?
I can't
terrible.
Say. I can't
Will's
say.
Rolling his eyes.
Yeah. Who knows?
Well, you know. Do you know what I mean? I mean, it's always interesting when someone that has been so successful with another artist, and you know, what happens when they work with someone new.
Well, you know what? There are some producers who are so overbearing, like Phil Spector. Mm. It always sounds like a Phil Spector album. So for this one, I would say it sounds like a Sharon Van Etten album, but just different from the others. You get the sense of her character. You know, that's what you want, isn't it? It doesn't sound much at all like St. Vincent to me. St. Vincent's much more theatrical. To me, this is an album about life, everyday moments of life, small domesticity. Liv, you mentioned that song Malibu. It's got that amazing line where he says she came and he's washing the floor while listening to the Black Crows, and she says, I couldn't have loved him anymore.
Yeah.
And
that's I love that line.
It's a great line because it's small domesticity. You know what I mean? It's small. I'd say the small romance of domesticity. In other words, these things which don't seem to be worth writing about, but actually really define life and say much more about where you're at in life. And so I think lines like that is what she's so good at.
You're going to make me cry. It's like that bit at the end of that Richard Curtis film About Time, where it's all about how the small things about, you know, someone, you know, tucking you in at night or sort of putting the heating on when you're cold, or those tiny things that happen in the house, and how that's the most important thing. And actually travelling through time or having loads of money isn't important. It's just the little things. I'm going to start crying.
Liv, I thought you were going to giggle your whole way through this.
It's got
this
very
programme,
emotional.
So we've gone the other way. Yeah. But you're right, it's a really beautiful thing. And I think that shows when you're a songwriter or writer of any stripe, being able to put those things that aren't confessional even, but the kind of confidence in your ability to translate emotion with something that might be is quotidian, is a brave and pretty grown-up thing, I'd have thought, as a writer and as a songwriter.
Yeah, but also it shows that she's not a poser because
exactly.
You know, there's been, let's face it, she's not the first indie folky person to discover electronics. You know, it's pretty much every single other indie band has done the same thing. So it wouldn't mean anything.
Yeah.
You know, it wouldn't mean anything unless there was some substance behind it. But as it is, it works, you know, because it does feel, I feel that it's like an album where she didn't have all the time in the world to make it. So she had a bunch of ideas and she wanted to represent what's going on in her life. But it wasn't going to sit there and kind of, you know...
Get stale, really, and get overwritten.
Well, yeah, get overwritten. And so actually that kind of punchy, more modernist feel of the music really does work with the subject matter, which is about someone who's now getting older and getting on with life as it unfolds.
I wanted to draw your attention... as if your attention needed drawing, to the album cover, which people, as they're listening to this programme, will be able to search for online, I'm sure. So there is an album cover. This is it's a child's bedroom, shared, I guess, between a baby in a crib and a young girl. And an album cover with Sharon's face on it lies on the floor. It's pretty chaotic. It's kind of like, there's something of kind of like a Renaissance masterpiece and a really messed up child's bedroom about it.
It reminds me
it's
of that
quite chaotic,
program.
Isn't it?
What's that program where those two women go and clean your house because you've got too much stuff in your house?
How
clean
I know
is your
the
house?
Ones. Yeah.
Kim and Aggie.
Okay, yeah, they come along and sort your house out, don't they?
Their houses always look like that. So just this full is, of crap.
But this is sort of like the pride. There's a bit of pride in that, isn't there? I mean, obviously she's just had a baby, so she kind of maybe is kind of coming into this universe of what, this is what her house is going to be like, kind of thing. It's an odd album cover. I kind of can't stop looking at it. It's really good. There's so much detail in it. It's a bit like a Bruegel or something. I'm expecting a man to be caganning in a corner.
It's kind of squalid as well, isn't it?
You do. Finally.
I just love the Bruegel reference.
It is a bit like a Bruegel.
It's true.
I'm expecting sort of, you know.
It's nice that
it's more Bruegel than Bosch. There's a lot of, you know, mainly decent things going on in this.
It's a very domestic scene covered in toys, and then you've got her album just sort of chucked under some toys in the corner as if she's got kind of saying, like, yeah, I've made an album, but actually the most important thing is family and the rest of stuff going on. It's a lovely cover. I wonder how much involvement she had in it, I hope. It was kind of her behind it, or someone else clever.
Yeah, it's cool. We think buy this on vinyl if you can buy it, because it would make a great...
Good vinyl album, because it's the kind of album that benefits from just...
Five tracks each side, perfect
just
balance.
Just put it on, put the needle on, play it, sit down on the sofa, you know, go into a trance, and then turn it over and go into another trance.
Lovely.
Also, we talked about having the baby at the beginning, and we kind of thought this might be... You can over-egg the significance of this with people's kind of public pronouncements and what a record can be about and things. But you had an idea that reminds you slightly of Ray of Light, Madonna's, I won't say comeback record, but an album, the first album that yeah. she'd made in a while, a bit like this one from Sharon Van.
It was a bit of a comeback, I think, yeah. back then. It was 98, I think, and she worked with William Orbit on it. But back then, all the press was concentrating on how she had just sort of had a baby and sort of made an album quite quickly off the back of that. And I just suddenly realised it was the same with Sharon's album, that a lot of the kind of headlines or kind of stand firsts around the articles surrounding the album all mention having a baby, which as a woman of 37, you know, isn't a mad thing to do.
It's not unusual.
No.
It does happen.
It's like that, yeah. that old Private Eye cover when Kate Middleton had a baby. It says woman has baby on the front of the...
Yeah. Like,
I mean, it's not a hugely weird thing to do. But then with Madonna, I was looking back earlier when that album first came out, Rob Sheffield reviewed Ray of Light for Rolling Stone. And the title he put, She Gets Knocked Up, But She Gets Down Again, which is obviously a kind of Chumbawamba reference. But people were kind of really making a big deal out of Madonna sort of having a baby and making this album. But actually, maybe it's because I'm a woman, but listening to Ray of Light really is this amazingly loving album that is just like this. Honestly, it's almost bursting with energy and joy and this kind of like love for life. And you can totally feel the same joy, the same sensation when you hear Sharon's record. So maybe there is something about having a baby than making a record. I don't know.
They might have been just buzzing on it, you know, both of them. Because Ray of Light is one of the Madonna, I think it's definitely one of Madonna's best albums.
It's amazing. It's not Arch, is it, in any way?
No, it's just up there.
It is fantastic.
Okay, nice one, Sharon. We're going to talk about... Yes, it's happened. We've made Liv cry, and now she's going to giggle her way through
hysterics.
The rest of the program.
Nice one, Sharon. This is funny.
It's quite funny.
It's basic compliments, isn't it?
Well done, Sharon.
I'm sure she's listening. Yeah.
Well done, Sharon.
Yeah, well done, Sharon.
Sounds a bit, it's patronising, isn't it?
Yeah, it is a bit.
I didn't mean it to sound like that.
It's no.
More like, nice one, Sharon, is what we're all saying.
We're going down the pub.
Yeah. Get a babysitter in, we're going out. Liv, you wanted to talk about Just Kids, Patti Smith. Patti Smith generally, and also this is her memoir. Tell us what led you down this path with Sharon Van Etten's album.
It was just when I was listening to the album in full, trying to think of what came into my head first. I imagined someone making a film of Just Kids, and I was imagining that this would be a great soundtrack to it because it sounded like the joy of being in a city and meeting all these people and being a certain age. It's a very sort of coming of age feeling that I got from it, which I know isn't really the case because of her age and because of the baby and her life being quite settled. But there are a few songs where I just felt like she was kind of looking back at this, maybe, you know, looking back from the armchair, being like thinking about her kind of more tumultuous days in New York as like a 17, 18-year-old. And imagine that. I mean, imagine anyone being 17 or 18 in New York and just kind of running around the town and going to clubs and having new experiences and sort of falling in love and then having a bad relationship, then a good relationship. I mean, all that stuff. So I just kind of...
The idea of the super intelligent confessional, the super intelligent diarist, the person that keeps a notebook to write stuff down. You sense that's both of these women, right?
Yeah, I think so. And the way they talk about life and the small instances, I think, is very similar. And I think there's a lot of similarities between the two artists in terms of the way they communicate with a lot of things. But I just think the parallels of the New York side of things, because I know that Sharon's music video for 17, which we've already mentioned, the kind of Bruce Springsteen-y one, is her filmed in front of all these old like New York haunts, which have obviously all been shut down and turned into something else. It's a very sort of nostalgic look at how New York used to be, which is, you know, something that is very often used by people as a way of talking about something, like looking back on a city that's changed.
Patti Smith as well, one of those kind of none more New York artists who wasn't from New York City as well, right?
Yeah, exactly.
It's that funny thing where people think, oh, you sound so new, this is such a thing. And of course, you wear the clothes, you ape the accent, you walk the walk. And
New Jersey girl as well.
Yeah, right? Yeah. I think so, yeah. Mm. You know so.
Yeah, worked in a factory.
I undermined your actual knowledge there, sorry.
So, but no, I think Liv's completely right. I completely hear that.
Isn't that a wonderful book as well? We talked a bit about Brett Anderson's Coal Black Mornings. A lot of people likened it to Just Kids, actually. And how that kind of thing where you can see no... Although the person is a wonderful writer, songwriter and prose writer, you see kind of no artlessness. You see no fakery, actually. It kind of real bores down into the honesty of that time, of being alive, of kind of really knowing the truth behind your thought process then, which is quite a rare thing to be looking back and memoirising it so precisely. It's kind of an amazing skill, right?
And it was a bit of a comeback too, I think, Just Kids. Yeah. I think Patti Smith in the years before that had kind of gone quiet, and then she released that and then suddenly has become the huge star that we know today, who's kind of the godmother of punk and, you know, is looked up to as this kind of almost biblical figure. People sort of go nuts about her. But I think that book did that to her. Interestingly, there's quite a lot of comeback chat. I mean, there's even a track on Sharon's album called, is it Comeback Kid?
Comeback Kid. Yeah.
That was the first single, was it?
So maybe it's about, I don't know, being reborn or something. I don't know. There's something, I don't know, something tying all together that I can't really put into words.
You said biblical, you said reborn. That's good enough for us.
Yeah, I suppose that's
a circle. It's a circle and you've squared it, Liv Siddle.
Thank you, Will.
It's going to go off now and giggle in the corner.
Trying to hold it in.
Through her tears. Will, you want to talk about The Breakfast Club. We're in American teenage nostalgia mode here.
It's a bit of a weird connection. You know, and if I sort of intellectualise it, it doesn't make sense. But there's something about the spirit of the album which really reminded me of The Breakfast Club. Mm. I mean, just to remind, yeah, I'm sure most people have seen it, but, you know, this is the one where they've got detention, they're a bunch of school kids, and it's pretty cheesy, really. You know, you've got a jock and the rebel and the weirdo and, you know, the kind of prom queen, and they're all coming together and discovering each other, I guess. you know, it's great. I mean, it's an 80s classic. But the reason it reminded me of, especially that song 17, which Liv talked about in the Just Kids way, what it really reminded me of is the fact that at that age, there's a kind of bittersweet quality where life is so exciting because it's all opening out and it's all new. But at the same time, you know you're losing your childhood and you know you're going to lose, all this insecurity as suddenly the world gets big. And something about this album, again, it's weird if you think about it, that she's 37, she's had a kid, she's settled down, she's working, as you know, doing all this other stuff. But there's something about this album which really reminded me of that time, and The Breakfast Club captures that. It's very American as well. It's a very, very American album. It's very much about that kind of, you know, that American thing of optimism combined with maybe a sort of slight kind of bittersweet melancholy.
Yeah, and it's a John Hughes film as well, and really clever but kind of knowingly cheesy.
I don't think he's knowingly cheesy. I think he thought he was a genius.
I put it through a prism of my own watching it when I watched it probably 10 years after it came out or something.
I'm old enough to remember as a kid, and all these films were coming out, and then by the time I was a teenager, we thought they were really, really naff.
Yeah.
And then about, so there's a friend of mine who's exactly 10 years younger than me, and she absolutely loves all the John Hughes movies. I was going, what? They were terrible. And then she's going, no, take another look. And this would have been, I don't know, maybe a decade ago, I started watching them all again. Some of them are terrible. But The Breakfast Club, it does really capture something. Sharon Van Etten reminded me of it because there's a kind of wide-eyed, it's sort of self-dramatizing. You know, 17 is really self-dramatizing because she's talking to her younger self. You know when you sort of imagine yourself in a film and you're slightly sad, but definitely very photogenic. And, you know what I mean? It's that kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know, going along and no one understands you, but then you go, you know, you walk into some amazing place and they all think you're great.
Yeah.
It's a bit like that.
Yeah.
You know, there's something.
She's the star of her own.
Star of her own movie.
Yeah. There is something about that. And unashamed of it too. 37's quite a good time, isn't it? Especially you've got your kid, you've had that, that's done. It's quite a good time, isn't it? Maybe she's reached the best time. No, the doubts are kind of things that you know you're not going to solve anyway. It's a coming of age thing. It's quite old to have a coming of age record, but it's good stuff.
But coming of age record, which keeps referencing youth.
Yeah.
So it's probably, I think probably at 37 you're old enough, you don't feel young anymore, but you don't feel so divorced from your past that it just seems like another person. So it's probably a good time to reflect on it.
It is weird how much we've talked about her age and how much all the reviews have talked about her age. Isn't that is a bit
well,
odd.
We're all slightly, it's a funny thing because we're all slightly different ages. So I'm.
Shall we go around?
I'm 41. So, okay. I mean, it's, you know, no, that's, we don't have to go around.
Yeah. I'm 30.
I'm 48.
Yeah, you see. So I think we all kind of feel, I'm a bit jealous of her being 37 somehow.
Well, achieving so much.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. Yeah, frankly. Yeah, I am jealous of that.
I've got to the point where I just stopped caring.
Well, what about you, Liv?
I was 30 2 weeks ago, so.
So you can, I mean.
I absolutely love this decade. It just couldn't be better. I honestly, I'm so excited about being 30 and being in my 30s. And I'm not being sarcastic.
30s is good stuff. They're definitely good stuff. Yeah. On that, slightly irrelevant, but maybe it isn't irrelevant. Maybe we're kind of getting right down to the nub of this wonderful record by Sharon Van Etten. Thank you very much. That brings us to the end of today's Monocle Culture Show. Thanks, of course, to my guests, Liv Suddle and Will Hodgkinson, and to my producer, Holly Fisher. Join us at the same time next week, but for the time being, I've been Robert Bounds, and thank you very much for tuning in.